There's no fucking way Brian Kenny's fucking sperm are doing the breaststroke up my fallopian tube.
Still queer as folk.
You're listening to the Still Queer as Folk podcast, where each week we take down an episode of Showtime's Queer as Folk TV show to find out if it still holds up 15 years later. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez. Check us out on all the social platforms at Still Queer AF, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
This episode is called Doctors of Dickology. It's episode 3 of season 3.
It first aired in the U.S. on March 16th, 2003.
It was directed by Lori Lind. She only directed one episode of Queer as Folk, though she did direct 4 episodes of our second favorite show, Degrassi, The Next Generation. Notably, she directed the first Degrassi episode where Marco starts to question his sexuality.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
I love Marco, in general.
That time that, we won't spoil it.
Next podcast is.
Yeah. I gotta say it. That time that you just grabbed Craig and kissed him.
Spoiler alert.
Well, you are the one that has seen Jake Epstein naked.
I just saw his ass.
Close enough.
It was great. He played Melchior Gabor.
Yeah.
In Spring Awakening. Melchior Gabor in Spring Awakening.
There it is.
And Spider-Man.
That episode of Degrassi was called Careless Whisper, and it was season 2, episode 14 of Degrassi.
The story for Doctors of Dickology was written by Cowan and Lippman, executive producers of the show. Ephraim Seeger wrote the teleplay and produced the episode. He wrote 8 episodes of the show and produced 34 of them.
Every time I hear Doctors of Dickology, for some reason I think of Dr. David Cameron.
Dr. David Cameron, Doctor of Dickology.
Yeah.
That's a great alliteration.
While I was watching this episode, I was thinking that I really miss Dr. David Cameron, and I remember how much I used to really not like him.
You hated him.
We
got into arguments over him.
I just like that. I like that arc in season 1. I miss Dr. David.
Wow. I never thought I'd hear you say that.
Here's a recap of Dr. David Cameron's of Dickology from Queer as Folk, the book.
Melanie decides that she wants to be pregnant, as so long as Brian's not the father.
Debbie is concerned about her first time with Horvath and turns to Emmett and Ted for a little oral education that is both a success and a failure.
Ben finds out that his former lover, Paul, died, and he starts taking steroids to combat his own possible wasting.
Brian helps plan the Gay and Lesbian Center Carnival for a fee and turns it into a carnal carnival.
Ooh, very nice. The party is a huge success, and Justin bails out on a night with Ethan to attend.
Ooh, there's a lot going on here.
Yes.
We struggled a little bit to figure out exactly where the B story is buried in here, but we'll give it a shot. So the A story I've got is Brian, Justin, Ethan, and a little bit of Michael sprinkled in. Thank you.
Oh. Sorry. I was just going to be like, I agree.
So the episode opens up with Brian being blown on the dance floor of Babylon.
I liked the dissolve of the camera spinning around as, you know, Brian is getting blown, as it goes into the washing machine at Michael's apartment. Yeah. It was a very nice comparison of the two lives they're leading right now.
I didn't even think of that. I just thought it was a nice visual.
But yeah, Brian is living this carefree life while Michael is
living his best life.
Yeah, and playing the adorable little housewife.
Have you ever been blown on the dance floor of a club?
I have blown someone on the dance floor.
What?
Club. Yeah.
Oh, wait. I think we talked about this. Was that at Charlie's?
Roscoe's.
Close enough.
Yeah, really.
Those were the guy ripped your shirt off.
Yes, correct. Listeners will recall from season 1.
mine was Hydrate. Have you ever been to Hydrate in Chicago?
Yes. I have been groped at Hydrate, and that is why I don't go to Hydrate anymore.
I didn't get groped. I didn't get blown, but I did jack off a boy that I ended up dating for quite a while. Come to find out that there were a number of people watching at the time. I didn't realize it, but.
Well, yeah.
It was dark. There was a lot of music. There was confetti falling out of the sky.
And then next thing you know, someone just slips and falls on their ass because you had your boy blow his load all over the floor.
Well, he did keep it in his pants, though. So.
Oh.
and on my hand.
Well, then.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the leather man who was doing, let's say, laundry?
Let's save that guy.
Okay.
Until
later.
Because
I have a lot of thoughts.
I left that part as one of the runners in the story.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
Instead, let's talk about Brian and Lindsay's conversation in the loft.
Help you with the center carnival? Are you out of your fucking mind?
I like to think not.
After the way they screwed me, the only thing I'd like to help the center do is self-destruct.
Well, that's exactly what might happen if we don't boost our corporate sponsorship and raise a couple hundred thousand.
That's not my problem.
Look, there's a naked Asian man wandering around Brian's loft out of nowhere.
I don't understand.
Oh, hi. Why is that guy still there, though?
I don't think it matters to him because this is not the first time that Mel and Lindsay together have come to Brian's apartment and have a conversation while he has a trick still over.
But that's the part that I don't understand is why these tricks are still there, because Brian's not really known as a cuddler.
I think he likes to show them off. It's almost like a trophy. Because I really think he does all this for sport. Like I had mentioned in the previous episode, I don't think he truly enjoys sex. But it's more the hunt that he enjoys.
True.
So, yeah, he's showing off his latest kill.
But the guy that shot buckets in the last episode, he got kicked out right away. So what's this guy doing there? He's just kind of wandering around. Then he goes and lays down in Brian's bed and is reading a book.
Or was that a comic book? I thought it was Rage.
Was it?
I think that would have been really
funny. That would have been accurate.
Yeah. Maybe he wasn't done. Maybe he was just getting started.
Round two.
Yes.
Tannis and Philip are back. Do you remember those two? The important event co-chairs?
Yes, the co-chairs at the Gay and Lesbian Center.
I thought this Gay and Lesbian Center storyline is interesting in that it starts to show a grown-up angle to the show. The Gay and Lesbian Center becomes more and more prominent this season. This is our first real taste of it other than Justin's art show last season.
And what is it that Lindsay offers them? Because at first they're like, they want nothing to do with Brian. And then she shows them like his prospectus of the carnival in order to garner a lot more in ticket sales. Cause I think they've only said sold 40 tickets to the carnival. And his proposal will bring them like $100,000 or something like that.
Yeah, what kind of a carnival is that? I think initially Tannis and Philip, I just love those two characters. They're just like so bratty back and forth.
Yes, they're very uppity. I think it's as if to say like they're the good gays.
Yeah, this carnival is too risque for the center, the Gays and Lesbian Center.
Yes, I believe Philip calls it that it does not show a positive gay image.
Mm-hmm.
In which I then wonder, what is a positive gay image?
It's Brian in a Corvette. So
Corvette, yes.
I thought that this was the most out of place prop car in the series. Old men drive Corvettes.
I literally, as I was watching the episode, I was taking the notes saying, what's going on after this breakup? Is Brian just having a midlife crisis? And not 2 seconds later, Michael says it must be a midlife crisis just 10 years too soon.
Boyfriend replacement.
Yes, the boyfriend replacement.
I always thought that the Jeep was a stretch, too. In the UK edition, they always made such a big deal about gays drive Jeeps, and they recycled that story into the US series, gays drive Jeeps, and Brian drives it right through the showroom window. I don't know any gay guy that drives a Jeep.
No.
Do you?
No.
There's a piece of fun trivia here that you might get a kick out of. The Corvette and Dr. David Cameron's Jaguar had the same license plate on them.
Whoa. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Is that more brilliant prop work from our favorite prop designer?
I don't know. They probably only had one license plate available. So it goes from car to car.
We think it's a brilliant artistic decision. It probably was just budget constraints. I love that.
Yeah, Tanya Lemke had left the show by now, so I don't think that she had worked on this particular episode.
Well, she should take credit for it anyway, because we love her.
So apparently Justin happens to be the only artist that Brian knows.
I have a proposition, a business proposition.
What'd you have in mind?
A poster, something hot and brilliant, and something by tomorrow. I wouldn't ask you if I didn't think you could do it.
Or if you weren't desperate.
Yeah, that too.
So,
well, probably the only artist that would do this on one such short notice.
Yeah, for $500 for one poster, you could do that in an hour. Sure, he's got a whole company of artists at his disposal.
Yes, he works at an ad agency. So, but he goes to Justin.
Yeah, why did he say that he's desperate for it, for this last minute gig? That was just kind of some sloppy writing there, because we know that Brian works in the creative industry.
Or it plays right into exactly what Ethan has a problem with, which we can get into later. But yes, at first, Justin offers to do it for free because, like, it's for charity. And then he doesn't even negotiate the fee. He doesn't try to, like, meet Brian halfway. He says, okay, fine, $500, and then doesn't move on it. And it's kind of great.
Good job, Justin. Ethan invites Justin to his, I don't know what this was, his little event. His
soiree.
Yes.
I think a soiree is the best way to describe it. It was very bougie.
Justin says that he hates people.
Now, why do you have to be so antisocial?
I'm not antisocial. I just can't stand people.
Come on, you'll have a great time.
Chatting inanely about independent film with a room full of strangers.
Oh my God, you're a bigger fucking snob than I am. Mwah. Must be why I love you.
I never really saw Justin as an introvert before, so this seemed like something new for him.
Actually, I mean, I see it. I get where he's coming from. I sometimes say that. I'll talk to, like, my friends that I'm very close with at parties, but I have trouble making the leap towards others unless I have been properly, you know, provided alcohol to go talk to other to people I don't know.
Properly provided alcohol, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. You what? Do that.
How do you do that improperly?
You make me pay for it. Yeah. So we have the other moments that we've seen Justin at parties. He has kind of been a wallflower. Like when he met up with the guy that was closer to his age at that one party that he went with Daphne. Yeah. The virgin. He wasn't really talking to anybody else because he didn't really connect with anyone, nor did he really want to deal with the other straight boys there. And then he found the one other gay guy, locked onto him, and then fucked him on the coats.
Yeah. I just think it was a little too convenient for Justin to hate people, be talking about chatting inanely, when in fact, that's what he does when he goes out in Liberty Avenue. He has no problem picking up anonymous tricks. He has no problem talking to them.
Well, I don't think much talking is involved.
Well, true. It just seemed like a little too convenient, a little bit of a new aspect to Justin. I could see where Ted might say that. Ted being more of the introvert and the awkward person in public.
Well,
but Justin?
Well, Ted is awkward in public, but he's, I don't think, an introvert. He certainly throws himself out there.
Yeah, definitely. Ethan said something that I bumped on, and we always talk about this accelerated relationship thing in the show where Ethan just all of a sudden comes out of nowhere and says,
"That's good, why I love you."
They're using the L word already?
I thought that was pretty apparent when they got together at the end of last season. This was a passionate affair, and this was love at first sight kind of deal.
This is like 2 or 3 weeks after that event.
They're young and dumb and in love.
That's apparently true. Twinks always say that to each other. I love you.
After 2 weeks.
Justin and his decisive behavior comes back into play. He says, "I want to be with you. I just love it."
He's very direct. He's very cut and dry. He tries to leave no gray area, because this is where, and I guess this is where our listeners are starting to, I'm starting to understand our listeners' position on Ethan. This jealousy turns very quickly.
True. And here it turned into Ethan having his pants pulled down and getting blown right in the apartment there.
Did you notice how the camera is sort of just stayed on Ethan?
Yes, it was so good.
We understand what's happening, but they stayed on him for much longer than I thought.
Oh, it was perfect. I really like that. It kind of shed this moment of, it showed love, I guess. It
showed passion.
Yeah, that camera work was great though. So there's a cute little song from 2001 that was playing while he's being blown. It's a song called Newton's Apple from Danny Michael. There's a lyric in here that I picked out that I wanted to read to you. Mm-hmm. I'm on the road to happiness and the cool, cool streams of love. I'm going to get myself so dirty.
Damn.
Isn't that a good lyrical tie-in to this scene?
Streams of Love.
It's funny because I remember the song and I remember liking it and I kind of liked the melody. And when it came time to review the episode, I had to look up who it was. And I listened to the whole song and I'm thinking like, song's like, eh. But the 20 seconds that the music supervisors pulled out to do it in this scene was great. The rest of the song was just kind of like, okay.
No, they got what was important, the streams of love. Maybe I should use that next time I decide to flirt with someone on any of the dating apps. You want any of my streams of love?
I'm going to get myself so dirty. I'm really digging this romance between Ethan and Justin.
It's still passionate. It's still, I mean, hot.
Yeah.
It's just hot.
I just like it. I'm sorry, listeners. This is great. This is great television. So this is great timing for Michael to show up at Brian's loft while Justin was there talking about the poster.
Mm-hmm.
Michael seemed a bit miffed that Justin was there.
Shocking.
Tired old storyline. We know.
They did mute it a lot because he could have gone off on his screaming tangents.
Yeah, that's true.
But here it's like, I'm going to be somewhat civil to you.
Yeah. Tired of it though. I did take a certain delight in having Michael walk in and seeing Justin there though. I was like, yeah.
What was that again?
Yeah. That's quite a one hitter that Brian has there. Did you notice that? It's stainless steel, spring loaded bat, integrated flame. Let's get high, Mikey.
Seriously, I just have a one hitter that looks like a cigarette.
Yeah, this was like a device. This wasn't just.
It was a contraption. That's what it was.
Yeah. It's like, where do you find that?
It's very funny watching them get high off of pot. Have we seen them get high off of marijuana? We see them do like the trail mix and all of that. But,
well,
just good old fashioned pot.
When this scene started and there's this great shot of the camera spinning as they got high, I was thinking, I think we've seen this before. And we did. Season 1, episode 14, when Michael was not quite all in with Dr. David Cameron. Only that time they had a bucket of chicken and pizza. Not, I think they had like.
Oh, I just thought they got like
food this time.
I thought they just got drunk and ate all that food.
No, they were smoking weed too back then. They were weed drunk.
I think. I know that feeling. I know that exact feeling. Yes.
Why did Michael show up there anyway? Was he there to talk to Brian about Ben's emotional crisis or?
That was my assumption, but I wouldn't go to Brian for that comfort.
But then Brian was complaining about Melanie wanting his load. So did did Brian call Michael and say, dude, you got to come over? Or I don't know. What was he there for?
Convenience. Let's just call it what it is. It was there for convenience to move the plot along.
They also smoked weed in three different ways. First, they had the one hitter.
Uh-huh.
Then Brian rolls a joint. And then Michael's smoking out of a water bong.
Why are they so complicated with this? Well, I just need the...
Then they get giggly high. And I hate being around giggly high people.
Oh, they're the worst.
Yeah, this was very much, in quotes, stoned.
Yes, we are stoned right now. Much like Melanie is lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were playing the very obvious high.
Yeah, too much of it just seemed recycled to me, though. It's, I don't know why he was there. Let's lay on the floor and eat junk food and get intoxicated high, whatever. I don't know.
Which, you know, my roommate and I do all the time. It's great.
You don't travel for it, though.
No, that's very true. We live together, so it's perfect. The last time we did that, we ordered insomnia cookies and listened to the Spice Girls. It was a great night. Yeah. Things happen at my house, folks.
If you're not in Chicago, Insomnia Cookies is a place in Chicago that delivers freshly baked cookies 24 hours a day.
And it's fucking amazing.
Yeah, they're great cookies.
Because like they keep them warm. So even when you get them, if they're being delivered, they're still like gooey. this is just me trying to get Insomnia Cookies to sponsor us.
It's definitely something for the stoners. So Brian and his weed three ways will work just fine here. So I guess the next day there's a sidewalk scene where Brian's just kind of wandering down the street with Justin.
I was just admiring your boyfriend's latest creation.
An artist always does his best work when he has somebody he loves to inspire him.
Yeah, so I've been told.
We should go.
See you tonight.
Oh, Brian gave us tickets to the Center Carnival. I'm sure it'll be a blast, but we've already got plans.
Oh, well, if you change your minds, your names will be on the list.
And, oh, look, there's Ethan.
Yes, which to me made it seem like Ethan was stalking them.
Yeah, I thought that too. And I didn't like how Ethan was so controlling in that moment.
Yes, because Brian offers both of them to tickets to the carnival, you know, to thank him for the poster. And Ethan said, oh, no, unfortunately, we already have plans.
Yep, hands him right back.
And he said, and Brian, being, I think, pretty congenial, is just like, well, you know what? Your name's on the list if you change your mind.
I love that comeback, though. It's like, oh, you're not taking the tickets? You'll be on the list.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. It's very top-like behavior.
But did you catch the dialogue that happened as they were leaving?
So, how you doing?
So, why aren't you in class? I thought you had a class.
What about class? Why aren't you in class? Shouldn't you be in class? And I'm like,
oh, I didn't take it that way. I thought it was cutesy. I half thought that that was improv dialogue or it was Foley added later.
Oh, the dialogue?
Sorry, ADR added later. It just seemed a little like off script somehow.
Like it didn't, like the audio didn't quite match up.
Yeah. And the delivery was a little stilted, like, whoa, wait, you just asked me a question. I must answer it.
Okay. Then that would explain why I thought because the question just felt like really on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, are you going to let Justin answer? Yeah.
No, I'm going to have to watch that again. My recollection is it was cute.
Oh, yeah. I did not find it cute at all. I was kind of like, I bet it's none of your fucking business.
Well, they love each other.
It doesn't mean you have to know where I am 24/7. That's a little weird.
They live together.
Okay.
They blow one another.
Well, I know Justin's really doing a lot of the blowing.
Yeah, that's true. I'm starting to think that Justin's really the bottom in this relationship, they're not really even verse.
Yeah. Interesting.
So let's talk about Ethan's soiree, as you called it.
Ugh.
This was just a bit unbelievable.
So this is the imaginary boyfriend. Ethan tells me you're an artist.
Yep, that's right.
What kind of stuff do you do?
Lately, I've been manipulating classical form with digital imagery.
And you're not just a pretty face.
No. I got a pretty big cock as well. And I give one hell of a blowjob. Right, Ethan?
I think that Justin can be bored, but still just make a go at it. Instead, he announces that he has a big cock and gives good blowjobs. It's like, come on.
I thought it was hilarious. But
I thought it was funny.
But it wasn't provoked in a way
exactly.
Where he seemed, where it was like when Michael felt really uncomfortable at the dinner party with all of Dr. David Cameron's friends.
That's where I know you from. From the white party. You gave me crabs.
There, his outbursts made a little more sense. But
yeah, because they were picking on him.
Yeah, it wasn't like, they weren't talking down to Justin. They weren't speaking ill of him in any way. I was a little surprised at how they went about that.
Yeah, the scene didn't make much sense to me. Ostensibly, it was there to get Justin to go to the carnival. But it seems like Ephraim Seeger could have come up with a better reason to get him to the carnival than to get catty at his boyfriend at a party that his boyfriend wanted to introduce him.
It was to his friends.
Yeah, it was his debutante event.
And his coming out party.
Yeah, and he, I don't know. It just didn't ring with the rest of the, I'm really digging this relationship. It was just like, don't be a dick. It's like, grow up.
He is still only, what, 19?
He's still 18.
He's still 18. He's a teenager.
But still.
So he's going to have, he still kind of has a kid attitude, even though he's been through a lot.
Boyfriends want to like cling to each other at that age.
Yeah, that's why it was weird. That's why it was just strange.
I did like the carnival, though. It reminded me of this night that used to be going on in Chicago called Porn and Chicken. Did you ever go to Porn and Chicken?
I never got to go.
It wasn't in Boys Town in Chicago. It was traveled a couple times. It was mostly in Wicker Park, but it was kind of the same decadent type of carnival.
Yeah.
Mixed with alcohol and good DJs and yeah, it was really good. So as soon as I saw that, I was thinking, hey, I wonder if that's where Dom got the idea for Porn and Chicken from. Dom was a promoter.
And you know what? I agree. It definitely was an excessive party because it looked like there was a live sex show.
Mm-hmm.
There was
the anal ring toss.
The anal ring. Well, the butthole bingo. The ring toss was just them throwing the ring, the rings onto
a
dildos.
Dick. Yeah. Why did I think anal there?
I don't know. The guy, instead of swallowing swords, was deep throating dildos.
Somebody was shooting ping pong balls out of their butt.
That was the butthole bingo.
Oh, okay.
Which, I'm assuming his ass was clean as a whistle because those were white ping pong balls that are being shot out of his hole.
Maybe they just need to put it on the surface and he just builds up a little pressure behind it. Maybe.
Yeah, they're not going all the way in.
Yeah, I don't know if you could get a ping pong ball in. They would crush.
Unless his sphincter muscles like are delicate and then force them when they need to. I don't know. Maybe we should interview him.
Oh, yeah.
And see if he has that skill.
Justin looked a lot more comfortable here than he did at Ethan's party. And I guess that was the point of Ethan's party. Was that the only reason that he went there? Why did he go to Carnival?
Yes, because he also lied to Ethan, which is not going to help the whole jealousy thing. He told Ethan he was just going to, he just said, I'm going to go, I'm tired. And then he goes to the carnival.
I guess it's a lie of omission, maybe. He didn't say, I am tired, I am going home to go to bed.
That's true. He just said, I'm tired, I'll see you at home.
Yeah.
So he didn't necessarily not say he was going to the carnival. So, but even then, like when Justin left that party, he seemed to have, I felt like Ethan had a suspicion of something.
Yeah. It seemed like he had to leave the party and he had to appear to enjoy himself at the carnival just to add some tension to the Justin-Ethan romance that I was digging, which is unfortunate. I wish they could do like an entire season together.
Yeah, why is that so bad? Let them have it play out.
Let's stay together.
for one season.
Just stay home and listen to Al Green.
So Justin gets to the party or he gets to the carnival and he doesn't stay long.
He's in and out.
He sees the circus boy hanging on Brian, and he said, "I'm gonna go. Bye." They didn't even really have a conversation together. I don't know. I don't know what Justin's end game was with that.
Still queer as folk.
Like what you hear? Be sure to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. We like those 5 stars.
Still queer as folk. There's more on the way. So Debbie and Carl, I put this one down as the screwball sitcom runner in this episode.
Oh, this was so sweet, though.
Well, where have these kids been? We last saw Carl in episode 19 of season 2 at the Cops versus Queers bowling match.
Yes, against the Liberty Balls.
So he's been absent for a little while, but Debbie still seemed a little uneasy around him.
What do you say we skip the bowling this week? Maybe have a little dinner?
Friday is 3 grams of fish and 4 ounces of steamed kale.
My favorite. Afterwards, we can watch TV.
Yeah, well, the set downstairs is still in the Fritz. The only one that's working is the one in my bedroom.
I know.
No, I think she's definitely getting her footing. She's, kind of maybe a little coy, but enjoying the flirtation she's having with Have a Bath and...
Do we need to explain why you just called him Have a Bath? To new listeners.
Yes. For any listeners who haven't gone back, there was an autocorrect that happened on our script where Detective Horvath was autocorrected to Have a Bath. And so I decided I'm just going to call him Have a Bath from now on.
And Matt just stuck to a script and just did a perfect dry read.
Boom, Have a Bath. Horvath.
There's a funny little piece of trivia here. It's pretty well known, but Debbie's obviously dieting. And so she mixes up metric and imperial measurements here, and she says that she only gets 3 grams of fish.
Yes.
Well, 3 grams of fish is about the size of maybe a large marble. It's a gram. 3 grams is very close to an 8-ball of cocaine.
Oh, so why was she dieting? Did they ever just sort of introduce this thing of, oh, yeah, she's dieting.
Yeah, we know why, but it just came out of nowhere.
Exactly.
She's
like there
get
was no
naked with horror. Have a horror
for
bath.
Have a horror's bath?
Have a horror bath bath. All together, jump in the tub.
Yeah, so she's dieting because of this build up to the possibility of being naked with Detective Have a Bath. And
3 grams of fish.
And how many lima beans?
Yeah. Well, then she said like ounces of lima beans or something.
Yeah,
like, so it's like 10 ounces of lima beans and 3 ounces of fish or 3 grams of fish.
That must be like the fact that this is a British creator,
yeah,
but they're filming in Canada that takes place in the US and they're all just kind of like, fuck it.
Is Sharon Gloss an American or is she a Canadian?
She's born in LA. Yeah, she's American. So okay. It's got to be the writer. She's like, she saw the script. She's like, I got to sell this.
Well, speaking of selling, the social gym comes back with synchronized workouts.
And Debbie has joined.
Hi, Debbie.
Which I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet. I mean, we know she's gone to the gym. And I love that Michael has this whole flipping his shit saying, can I not go anywhere?
Oh, I'm so tired of that.
At this point, I'm like, Michael, you kind of have to understand that your mother is just now a part of the gay culture of Pittsburgh a little more than you are, because she deals with all of the gays when she's working. Yeah. So you know what I wish they had done? I wish some of the other people at the social gym had said hi to Debbie.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm sure they've seen her at the diner.
Hey, Deb.
I'm sure they would have been like so encouraging to her. I would have loved that. So Michael can shut his fucking mouth.
Yeah. I think Conan and Lippman just keep recycling this anger about Debbie being a fruit fly. It's like, sure, I wouldn't want my mother following me around Boys Town seeing what I get up to, but.
Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine.
This has been going on forever.
This has just been part of his life. I don't know why he's freaking out about it now.
Exactly.
Especially back in 2003, to have a mother that supportive of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. God is lucky fucking stars and stop being such a little bitch.
Wow.
Sorry. I just realized like how angry Michael gets me sometimes.
Still queer as folk.
Well, we find out who the titular characters are in this episode. The Doctors of Dickology. It's Emmett and Ted.
Doctors of Dickology.
So Emmett,
the doctors
sure,
are in.
But Ted? Ted's a doctor of Dickology? The series has always made a point that Ted can't get laid. So how is he a doctor of Dickology and why does he have this mysterious skill handed down through the generations of how to blow somebody?
I'm going to chalk it up to one, his porn empire experience.
But as you and I both know, what happens in porn doesn't always translate well.
Absolutely.
To real life.
However, I'm wondering if that's his skills are the hidden one because he could never land the guy to show what skills he had. He was sort of the the hidden secret. Because, I mean, let's remember all of the accoutrement he brought when he and Emmett were going to have sex for the first time.
Yeah, that's like overcompensating, though.
And they complimented each other on their different lover skills.
Lovers.
Ugh.
So they somehow bust out a table full of brand new dildos. This was just comedy relief, but I actually liked it. It was funny and pretty accurate, their lesson.
Yes, and it made me think about how different sexual education is for gay and straight people. Because I didn't have a specifically gay sex education in high school. It was just...
Wait, you want to be taught how to suck dick in high school?
Not... Okay, but this is...
Can
but
we
this,
go to no, that school? Be no, like 21 Jump Street.
But this is a legitimate thing in that sex between gay people is very different than it is between straight people.
You grab your putt and you pull.
Thanks, Ted. No,
it's not that different.
Well, it is though. There are different techniques involved. There are different pleasure centers involved when it comes between gay and straight people.
Yes, but sucking dick is sucking dick.
Maybe she's born with it. I don't know.
Well, Debbie wasn't, but the doctors of Dickology were. So
exactly. But I stand by my statement that that is a conversation because there are young gay people who are trying to have sex that aren't getting the full information they need to have a safe, pleasurable experience.
Oh, I think they do now. Like, they have the internet.
We're going to trust the internet. Well, I mean, granted, I learned from
you
HBO.
Had America Online.
That dial-up. Waiting for those JPEGs to load.
Yeah. So this hookup moment between Debbie and Horvath, this is something interesting. There is a heterosexual couple on Queer as Folk. I'm not sure why this story evolved the way it did. Ostensibly, the show is about queer people, right?
So why have a straight relationship, especially an older straight relationship?
I mean, I'm not opposed to it. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering at what point did somebody have the great idea of let's give Debbie a boyfriend because it's going to further queer as folk?
Maybe the end game was to show how someone who isn't exposed to gay culture can become understanding and even an advocate. Because we see, because we know that that becomes Horvath's path eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe that's it. But I do see your point that in this beginning, these beginning moments, you're like, wait a minute, I came here for the gay people. Why are we giving the straight people a storyline? We see this in everything else.
I mean, it's one thing if one of the gay characters has sex with a straight person.
Which, that happened in the first episode.
It did.
Straight. That client that Brian pounded in the bathroom. Right.
Yeah, well, foreshadowing, there's some scenes deeper into the series where legitimate straight sex happens with the gay characters.
Yes.
So that I can see in a show called Queer as Folk, but I just don't know why anybody wanted to see Debbie hooking up. It's one thing to...
Doesn't she deserve happiness too?
True, but I think there's more stories to be told from the gay perspective, the gay characters. There's
hundreds of stories they could have shown from the gay perspective, from the queer perspective. But in this instance, I think they gave what maybe people in 2003 wanted, or maybe this was an effort to engage a wider audience. We see this all the time in other media where they know that the main storyline that they're trying to promote is a little too niche. So we got to do something that would get a broader audience to maybe then acknowledge what it is they're going to see. And it's bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, we all wanted to see Debbie happy. We want to see Debbie fulfilled. But the nature of Debbie's character is spinster, like queer den mother, not cop fucker.
Yeah. Sure. I would have been happier if this had been introduced much later in the series. Like if it had been like near
the last
end.
Episode.
Yeah, near the end of this, like near the end of the series. Like, you know what? Even Debbie gets her happy ending. But yeah, there's something that to be said for the fact that Debbie as a character was always meant to be that den mother who takes in those who may not have had the loving, accepting relationship with their parents, i.e. Justin.
Yeah, and
she stands in and she is that supportive parent for them.
Make no mistake, I'm not like hetero bashing here. I just thought that this was a curious writing choice for a show that was breathtaking and groundbreaking and dangerous. So there's other ways to be dangerous, like
absolutely.
Dale Wexler.
Mm. Become a suck pig.
So anyway, she blows him. He's in bed.
Apparently she's
awesome.
Amazing. She is an A+ student.
I'm not sure if Horvath was doing it on purpose, but he just started to come off as a total dick.
Let's just say that no one could do what you just did without a little practice. And from the way that you, lady, you could teach a class.
Is that so?
Yeah, I didn't understand these comments. I was like, in what way was this even necessary?
He calls her a lady and stuff like that.
Yeah, like he's with whatever she learned from Emmett and Ted were apparently so nasty and so dirty that bullshit she hasn't done this in years.
Yeah.
She made it sound like she's been sucking cock every day for the past 10 years or something. And of course she's going to be hurt. And who says that literally right after you finished?
Yeah, like, right.
Rude.
I love how terrified Horvath looked when Debbie kicked him out of bed. He looked thoroughly terrified that she was going to like kill him.
She was going to go like Lorraine Bobbitt on his ass.
I loved it.
Now you better take your suspicions and your suspenders and remove your butt from my bed.
Debbie.
Now, out! Get out!
There was a bit of a small costuming gaffe here. Oh. In the first shot, we see that Horvath is naked under the sheet because we see hip. We see middle-aged man hip. But when Debbie shoos him away, he has on gray briefs.
Did he?
He did.
Oh.
Peter McNeil was the actor that was playing Horvath. He plays him out throughout the entire show. I really like that character. And I like Peter McNeil's portrayal of him. So Debbie, Emmett, and Ted in the diner are discussing the results, or they're trying to discuss the results. But why was Debbie pissed off at Ted and Emmett here? It wasn't their fault. She was just cunty.
Wait. So how was it?
Yeah, should your professors give you an A?
Yeah, for asshole.
because that's what I am for listening to you.
What, he wasn't pleased?
Impossible. I defy any male, living or dead, not to respond to our time-tested technique.
Provided you followed our instructions.
Oh, I followed him. He responded to every flick and lick.
And so what's the problem?
The problem is he thinks I'm a whore.
I'm so proud.
Well, I don't ever want to see him again.
She should have, like, I think she was. I was too good at this. What have you guys done to me? But instead, she's just, like, bitchy.
I think she was embarrassed. That was the impression that Horvath had of her, based on what she learned from them. At first, they're like, oh, they're so proud.
That's so good.
Little babies Bless. All grown up. But they realize, because of how she reacted to that, that perhaps their degree was just too advanced for the situation at hand.
So, of course, they take it upon themselves to head to the local police precinct.
Excuse us, Detective Horvath.
What can I do for you, boys?
A dear friend of ours is in a little bit of trouble.
It seems last night an oral misdemeanor occurred.
What I loved was Emmett and the hooker wearing the same jacket. Gotcha on that one.
Oh my God. Yes. I cackled because they like totally clock each other. But I also love the dialogue right before that moment where Emmett says, "We're the sluts," and Ted says, "Speak for yourself." And I was like, "Wait a minute, Ted. Didn't you get pounded bareback in the back of a Jeep not two seasons ago?"
I forgot about that. That's a hot shot too. The camera shot, not the cum shot.
Yes, because the cum shot was inside him.
Ooh.
Well, and thanks to this conversation, Debbie receives a visitor. And I love how Horvath describes Emmett and Ted.
Oh, I kind of had a problem with this.
The tall swish stick and the one who looks like an accountant.
Well, the tall swish stick, I thought that was a little pejorative.
I think it just showed to me that Horvath is definitely a detective. Damn.
Yeah, but remember that Debbie's main problem with Horvath is that he's a homophobic asshole. He can't say swish stick to Debbie at this point.
Well, I think in this instance, because we know how proud Emmett is of his feminine
swishiness,
energy, it's okay. This one passes.
Hmm.
And I do love the fact that he describes Ted, who looks like an accountant. That's fucking funny.
Yeah. This was a cute little scene. Something I didn't like is that Horvath talks about two lesbians on the force that are going to teach him how to perform cunnilingus.
Do you have any idea what it means to me that you wanted to give me pleasure that much?
I thought that's what people do when they care about each other.
Which is why I enlisted detectives Caffney and Llewellyn. They're the two lesbians on the force. I told them I wanted a little crash course of my own.
You can't do that with coworkers. He's like a detective there, and so he finds two lesbian...
For all I know, he talked to Cagney and Lacey.
played by Sharon Glass, right? Yeah, I don't think that Carl should have said that he did that with coworkers. You can't go up to a coworker and say, "I need you to teach me how to perform cunnilingus."
Well, we don't know how he approached it, but in this instance, again, for convenience, it helps wrap up that he was willing to learn to make sure he also gave Debbie pleasure.
Wait, you're really on the side of Horvath here.
Yes, I love their
Swish
story.
Stick was okay.
It's, so
it's like propositioning females at work was
it
okay.
It wasn't derogatory when he called them a swish stick. I don't think so. And we don't know what kind of ranking we were looking at when he asked. Well,
it doesn't matter if they're outranked or not. You can't even do that to a peer at work.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to let you have this one.
Let's try this tomorrow. You go up to a coworker and say, "You know what, Bob? I kind of have a problem here. I want to blow my masseuse tonight, and I don't know what to do. Can you tell me?
Do you have any pointers?
Do you think you can do that at work?"
There are a couple people I could go to.
But at work?
There are a couple people I could go to.
Wow. That's a very permissive workplace. Listeners, I don't recommend that you do this.
This is where we enter our disclaimer now that we are doing this for comedic effect.
Call a friend, visit phone a neighbor, use Emmett's gay crisis hotline.
Because that's what it's there for.
Hell, use the internet. I'm still not sure what this storyline is doing in the show, but this was cute and funny and I liked it. But again,
the show's queer as folk. I understand, but it's so cute.
It was.
Still queer as folk.
Ben didn't have much of a role in this episode. He had a very big moment.
Yes, this moment, this episode for Ben is meant to be the introduction of what will be a longer storyline in terms of his drug use.
Yes. So let's talk about that laundry room scene that you mentioned earlier.
So as the party at Babylon dissolves into Michael's washing machine in his basement, he has a neighbor who is doing his laundry in full leather gear. And he's not really doing like clothes laundry. Clothing laundry. He's washing all of his massive dildos. And then that made me beg the question, I'm sorry, but I feel like that's not proper care for those dildos to throw them in a washing machine.
Well, it was one dildo, right? And the rest were clothes, and he had like lacy clothes and stuff like that.
Sure, but I feel like dildos, like that's not the proper care for a dildo. And I feel like a Leatherman would
toy cleaner.
Yeah, I feel like a Leatherman would have known that.
Yeah,
he would have understood how to clean his equipment.
I thought Michael's treatment of that guy was a little bit shaming.
Yeah,
because he calls him the Crypt Master.
Well, and also, clearly this guy has probably been there before, so this shouldn't be new to Michael, unless this leather guy just moved in and is being really creepy.
Yeah, I thought it was an unusual attempt at comedy, too.
And I don't think it really landed.
Well, I think it could have. It couldn't have.
I think I would have enjoyed it more if Michael hadn't been so. I guess freaked out by it. If they would have like just carried on a conversation, I would have found that hilarious.
Yeah, if they
that it's every day. Like this is
exactly they came across as old normal. Friends.
Yes, like
it was incidental Todd, that he pulled that out the 12-inch on him.
Right. It's like a busy night ahead of you. Oh, honey, don't you know it? Like that kind of thing. That would have been fun.
So Michael and Ben are talking about moving in together. Is Michael more or less talking Ben into moving in together?
Yes, he wants him to stay.
You already have an apartment, complete with appliances and hardwood floors and a built-in boyfriend.
Yeah, I told you, I think it's best I find my own place.
Yeah, and I think it's best that you stay.
Because in the last episode, that was a whole drama.
Ben seemed kind of unwilling at this point.
Yes, I think he was trying to say, like, for the sake of this relationship, it's probably best that I don't move in with you so quickly.
Right.
Time is okay in this instance.
So amidst the full frontal nudity of the locker room, Ben finds out that his ex, Paul, had died.
A full hour on the pre-core, and all I dropped was a pound.
I'd have cut back on that pizza. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Jason, how's it going?
Good. Remember those 5 minutes in the 90s when everybody wanted to put on weight because it meant you weren't dying?
Didn't do Paul any good.
At least we don't have to go back to that goddamn hospice. Talk about depressing.
Sorry, what was that about, Paul?
Oh, didn't you hear? He died last night.
Yeah, and can we talk about those two?
Oh, I wrote that down, too.
I fucking hated those guys.
I wrote down, I felt like those two extras were really bad actors.
One, they were bad actors. Two, they were just bad people. You know, first of all, they were incredibly superficial, upset that they hadn't lost weight.
All of our friends.
To a point. But then the worst thing was when they said, at least we don't have to go to that hospice anymore. Oh, so depressing. And I was like, go fuck yourself. Someone died. Well, one of your quote-unquote friends died. The fact that they had mentioned a part of queer history as some sort of negative by mentioning the fact that people tried to gain weight during the pinnacle of the AIDS crisis to show that they weren't sick. That was why gym culture is so strong, especially with gay men, was because if you could show that you were gaining muscle, you were gaining strength, you could pass for not being sick. And that is such a huge part of gay male history that for them to mock it in that way, I was livid at these fuckers. And I wish that Ben had had a moment, not just in that moment that he finds out that Paul died, because all the extra says is, oh yeah, Paul, he died. And then Ben's just kind of like left with that news and they cut away to like the next scene.
Something about the hospice that I wanted to mention is for the survivors of a loved one that had died in hospice, it can be very hard to be anything but relieved that you're done with it. It takes such a toll out of the survivors, the living.
Yes.
That have to go through that. So I could relate to their comment. I didn't get as riled up about it as you did.
And it's because I didn't find their comment to be beneficial of that. I'm glad that this person's suffering is over and I'm glad I don't have to see my friends suffer in such a way. Like,
I think that's a polite way of saying it. Going to a hospice sucks. And you are relieved to not have to go there anymore.
Absolutely.
When it's
all
done.
The way they portrayed it
right.
was that it was such an inconvenience for them to have to go there and be supportive of their dying friend. And they're so happy to be like, ugh, thank God I don't have to do it. Felt so blasé.
Yeah.
Rather than having any. Without it being derived of any
I think they could have acted it better. They could have acted it better.
Maybe.
But I think the feeling is still there. It is, it's a, hate to say it, it's a sense of relief when you don't have to make that daily visit anymore to watch somebody that you really care about die.
And the problem that I had with them was their superficial nature of it. If they had been able to deal with it in a more human way, where like you could understand like, oh, that's why you're relieved. Because, mm-hmm. I agree that that takes a toll on the living just as much as it takes a toll on the person.
I wish Blair Fell would have written that scene.
Yes. Bring Blair back.
So later, Ben is smoking a joint on the sidewalk in front of the diner.
Hey.
There's some nice camera work on that exterior scene, though, because we see Liberty Avenue in a kind of a way that we haven't before. It looks a little more gritty, and it looked slightly dangerous, and that kind of tracked with where Ben was at that moment. And he had some great lines, and that Robert Gant acceptably delivered those. There was another piece of retroactive incontinuity here, though, because we saw Paul, the ex that died, not that many episodes ago.
It was just last season.
Yeah, he looked perfectly healthy and looked like he was taking care of himself.
Well, I mean, and this becomes Ben's point later on, is that, you know, I'm doing all these things to try and stay healthy, and this could happen to me in an instant.
Well, apparently Paul gave it a go for 5 years. So
yeah,
as you recall, he was on the street when Michael met him, and then he was at Ben's birthday party that Ben freaked out and walked out on.
Mm.
So let's talk about this weightlifting scene with Ben when he's working out. But did he look a little less muscular than normal in that?
I was concerned about his his lifting techniques. I was like, first of all, you need a spotter.
Well, no, he might have been on a machine that. No, he's not because he kicked that like heavy barbell back over his head, which is really bad form.
Exactly. I was worried. I was like, no, your form is all wrong, Ben. Get a spotter as soon as possible. So he goes to Roy, which, I mean, I feel like that's a little on the nose.
Regular Roy.
Roy.
Oh, I get it.
And I love how shady this is. He's like, could you help me with some supplements? And they go into the men's bathroom. But there is a moment before Ben is doing that lifting and gets the steroids where Michael is, I guess, trying to comfort Ben and saying all these things that he's doing is healthy and that you will, you know, you'll make it. There's nothing you have to worry about. And I realized that Michael is trying to fix the problem, and he's not really good at being sympathetic and just like letting his partner have out these emotions and these fears that he's experiencing. And he comes off a little dickish. So you're like, why are you sad? You're living. I'm like, well, Michael, listen to what Ben is going through and maybe just be that sounding board and let him get all of this emotion and all of this fear, you know, out. And then comfort him. But I don't think Michael is that good at the comfort part.
Yeah, I think he wants to be there for it and to be that guy. But he's not having the intellect to be able to do it.
Not at all.
A for showing up. C minus for what you're saying.
Yes.
So Melanie and Lindsay had a very trivial role in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
That is unusual that Melanie suddenly rekindled her hatred of Brian kind of out of nowhere.
There's no fucking way Brian Kenny's fucking sperm are doing the breaststroke up my fallopian tube. Not after all the grief he's caused us. We are not making the same mistake twice.
I understand perfectly how you feel, but what if something were to happen to us? A fatal accident?
Bungee jumping?
I'm serious. At least our kids would have the same father.
Oh, some father. Selfish, promiscuous. Who knows if he's even negative?
Well, whoever it is would have to be tested.
But think how good he's been to us and to Gus. Always there to write a check, put up a swing set, and save our wedding from disaster. Honestly, Mel, he's not the old Brian. He's changed. Bottom line, without him, our kids wouldn't be related.
And she uses some old tired lines. All the grief he's caused us. Things like that.
Yes, I was like, we heard this before.
Yeah. There's a lot in season three that has been recycled.
I was like, wait a minute, are we watching season one again? What happened?
Her argument didn't make sense to me, except the whole part about Brian's load swimming up her plumbing. I could kind of be on board with that. Like, if let's assume that she really does despise Brian, mm-hmm. she doesn't want his load. I can get there. But
right.
Why does Brian all of a sudden hate Melanie too?
So what do you say?
It's impossible. Melanie's one of the leading causes of erectile dysfunction.
Thank you.
Besides, I agreed to inseminate you, not your husband.
But if we get someone else, our kids won't be related.
Have you ever met my sister? That's not much of an argument.
We had a deal.
You're the ones that changed the terms.
It's like, oh, that's right. These two were antagonistic of each other in the beginning. So let's go ahead and bring that back so we can just have conflict in this episode.
Yeah, it seemed very manufactured and somewhat strange after 2.5 years.
Yes, at some point it's realizing, guess what? We're kind of stuck with each other. And I understand Lindsay's perspective of wanting to make sure that her children are siblings.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
I like that. Sure.
I totally get it.
Okay, let's wrap up this episode. Hits and misses. My hit was that evening in Ethan's apartment with Justin blowing him. Big hit for me. I like those stay-at-home nights with like jazz music playing, blowjobs, some wine. Mm. They just look really cute together. And sorry, fans, I love this relationship a lot better than Brian and Justin.
Oh my God, we're going to get so many comments.
Though, in my own defense, as I recall, when I watched the series for the first time, way back when, I didn't feel that way. I saw Ethan as the interloper, and I just wanted to see him back with Brian. But now when I'm rewatching these 15 years later, I'm really digging Ethan a lot more. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why.
My hit, and maybe I'm strange, I love Debbie and Have a Bath budding like sensual
fucking
relationship.
No, they didn't fuck. They just blew.
It's just so cute. They're like one of the more genuine couples in the show, which is very strange.
Not queer as folk.
Maybe it's like a 180, and like it's so strange to have that in the show that it then becomes queer.
It's like the alternate universe
yes.
sci-fi episode.
How about your miss?
My miss was Debbie and Carl.
Oh my God. How dare you?
It was funny, but I just don't know why Cohen and Littman brought in a heterosexual relationship. I don't get it. I don't think that this was the show for that. Thank you.
Well, we all know how I feel about it, so I'm not going to continue on. My miss is, I guess I just don't understand how Ben's lover dying equals him going into steroid use and then picking Michael up at Babylon.
Oh, yeah.
The way
I forgot
he
about
just
that.
Manhandles him. And I'm like,
that was kind of
what?
Cool.
I don't understand.
I like that part, though. Okay. This has been episode 3 of season 3, Doctors of Dickology.
Next time, Ted and Emmett move in together and find they are truly opposites.
Mel and Lindsay ask Michael to father their child.
Brian is forced to babysit his spoiled nephew.
That will be episode 4 of season 3, and it's called Brat Sitting. Thanks for joining us tonight. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us, and subscribe. It really does help more people find the show.
Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at StillQueerAF, and you can like us on Facebook at StillQueerAsFolk.
So thanks for joining us. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
See you next time.
Have a good night.
Still Queer as Folk was produced by me, Patrick Randall, for Slightly Unbalanced. Matt Dominguez wrote and performed the show with me. Still, Queer as Folk is made with love in Chicago.
Still Queer as Folk.